Thanks for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. The Great Recession has affected different age groups in different ways. Today, a look at its impact on the generation of those age 55 and above, many of whom are nearing retirement. Joining me here in the studio, Gary Burtless. He's with the Brookings Institution, Richard Johnson of the Urban Institute. From the Philadelphia Post Studios, Olivia Mitchell. She's professor at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. I look forward to hearing your questions and comments. 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Feel free to join us on Facebook or Twitter. And good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
Let me start with you, Gary Burtless. What are some of the unique problems facing these baby boomers as they consider retirement or are right there?
Well, the two things that matter the most to them are the terrible job market and the drop in the value of their homes and the value of a lot of the assets they hold in their retirement accounts. And that makes this time a very anxious one, a very worrisome time if you are 55 or older and you're still working.
Richard Johnson, how do you see it?
I think the big problem for people on the verge of retirement is the possibility that they might lose their jobs. We know that the unemployment rate, the Great Recession, has hit people of all ages. The latest unemployment rate is 8.9%. It's lower for people 55 and older. It's only 6.4%. But that's still very high, and the real problem for people when they lose their jobs at 55 or older, 50 or older, is that it takes them so much longer to get a job than it does younger people.
But I would think that if you're 55, say, you're going to decide you're going to wait a little longer rather than to even think about retirement, wouldn't you think, Gary?
Well, especially given the way people's wealth has taken a hit in the last 4 years, that's right. And in fact, that's what people say when they're asked about their retirement plans. I think among surveys that have asked this question over a number of years, we're currently at a peak in terms of the age that older workers select for when they think they are going to retire. So the financial worries are really affecting the way people think about retirement.
So what does that do? Does that skew the workplace to an older age?
Well, that would have happened anyway because the size of the baby boom generation is so big. Just the sheer number of people 66 and younger is so enormous relative to what historically has been the case in the United States. The generations that followed the baby boom are smaller, so consequently the baby boom looms very large in the workforce.
But, Gary, I gather that what you've got is a lower unemployment rate within this age group as well.
Absolutely. People who are older are less likely to be laid off. And as Richard said, when they get laid off, it's very tough for them to find another job, especially if their aspiration is to hold a job as good as the one they held before the layoff occurred. And so consequently, they spend a lot of time finding that next job.
Why does it take so much longer, Richard, for them to find jobs?
It really seems to be the problem seems to be that employers are reluctant to hire older people. It's not that they're not looking as hard as younger people. We've looked at some data, and they're engaged in just as many job search activities as younger people, and yet it takes them 40% longer to find a job than it does for people in their 30s and 40s. And I think employers are reluctant just because there's a sense that older workers are more expensive, that they're going to demand higher wages than younger workers, And at the same time, their health insurance costs are a little bit higher. The retirement costs can also be a little bit higher. And there's clearly this perception out there that they're more expensive. And also that there's less time. There's a concern that if you hire an older person, this person's going to retire in a few years. You're going to spend a lot of money investing in hiring them and training them, and then they're going to be gone in 5 years. Why not go for a 30-year-old who might be there for 20
Interesting.
Years?
Interesting. And turning to you, Olivia Mitchell, what about health care costs? Don't they figure into a company's decision to hire an older worker?
Well, it's absolutely true that healthcare costs do rise, particularly for people, say, 55 and up. On the other hand, that it's also the case that healthcare costs are fairly high for women during the childbearing age. So there's a lot of cross-subsidization going on within the workplace. One thing employers have done to try to cap the rise of healthcare costs is set up health savings accounts where they'll put a specific amount of money in, and then it's up to the employee to shop around for healthcare insurance and pay the bills.
But there are an awful lot of people, especially those within this baby boom generation, who perhaps have not saved as much as they should have saved for retirement, Gary?
Well, they're always about a quarter of any group of workers when they reach old age who haven't accumulated much at all in practical terms. It's not so clear that that's the wrong decision on their part. We do have a social safety net that for the aged population is really stronger than is the social safety net for people who are younger. And so if you have very low wages throughout your career, it might make sense to let Social Security and Medicare take care of most of your needs when you get past retirement age. But for the broad middle class, that's not enough usually, and they should be saving more.
Very true.
And certainly what's really different about the boomers than previous generations is that fewer of them have the traditional defined benefit pension plan. So it used to be the case that you would go to work and retirement wealth would automatically accumulate on the job if you had a job that had a pension. And when you're retired, you would get this pension based on how much you earned and how long you were there. You didn't have to do anything. Today, you can still accumulate pension wealth on the job through a 401k plan, but you have to make a decision as to how much you're going to put into these plans. You have to invest them wisely. You have to resist the temptation to withdraw funds if you leave jobs, borrow from the funds over time. You have to resist that temptation. So it just puts a lot more of the burden on workers than it used to.
And Olivia, the financial crisis we've seen has also put a burden on those 401k plans.
Well, indeed, the 401k plans, which were approximately 70% invested in stock, took a big hit during the stock market debacle. Of course, so did the defined benefit plans. And so that's why we see many employers that had those plans either freezing them or terminating them because they simply can't afford to throw in the money needed to keep the plans afloat. So retirement planning has really taken a big hit.
What about Social Security, Gary? How much does it really help people in retirement?
Well, if you've had low wages throughout your career, Social Security is really likely to keep your level of standard of living constant after you retire. But as you move up the wage ladder, if you have middle class wages, then you have to supplement what Social Security is going to provide you with something else. And there is, of course, uncertainty about how long Social Security benefits can remain as protected as they have been over the last 30 or 40 years. A lot of people worry that in the future we may have a different political view about the sustainability of these benefits.
Richard.
Social Security accounts for 90% or more of income for about a third of people 65 and older.
90%
for one third. Wow. On average, it replaces about 42% of your pre-retirement earnings. So it's important. And there is a real concern about its future viability You know, we might have to raise taxes, cut benefits a little bit to keep the program going.
And then there's that question about whether to begin receiving your Social Security at an earlier rather than a later age. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you can begin collecting right now at age 62. If you wait longer, though, you're going to get higher monthly benefits. That reflects the fact that you're going to get fewer benefits if you wait, so each monthly payment is going to be a little bit bigger. And by waiting, you can really increase your Social Security benefits. So today, if you're 62 today and you begin collecting at 62, you'll receive only 75% as much as you would receive if you waited until age 66.
But
it can make a big difference by waiting.
But
isn't
there also a question of having to live longer to make up what you wouldn't have gotten between 62 and 66, Gary?
If you're a worrywart, I think it makes sense to delay collecting the Social Security pension as long as you can, especially if you are concerned that you may run out of money when you're 75 or 80, because probably the most secure part of your income flow when you're past 65 is going to be the Social Security check. It rises in line with inflation. The government is not going to default on an obligation to somebody who's 80 or 85 years old.
Gary Bertles, he's Senior Fellow in Economic Studies at the Brookings Institution. I see our lines are filled. Feel free to send us an email, a tweet, or join us on Facebook. And, of course, we've talked about the economic aspects of those in the baby boom generation who are thinking about retirement or at least thinking they might have an opportunity to retire. What about the psychological stress, Olivia, of being a part of that baby boom generation and thinking about the economics attached to it?
Well, it's very clear from recent polls, including one from the Allstate National Journal survey, that we are talking about the anxious generation. That is, I'm a boomer, most of my friends are boomers, and I think all of us have finally recognized that we're not going to be looking at our parents' retirement. Social Security, Medicare, all these programs are facing much bigger problems than our parents did. Our home values have declined. Our 401ks are fairly limited. And healthcare costs just seem to be quite astoundingly high. So the level of us, I wouldn't call us near retirees, but boomers, the level of our confidence has declined substantially compared to our parents' level of self-assuredness and retirement confidence.
And what does that reduced level of confidence mean in terms of one's outlook?
Well, I think the most important degree of freedom that many people have, not everybody, but many people, is that they will need to keep on working and delay claiming Social Security. As was noted a moment ago, if you delay claiming, then the eventual benefit you get will be a lot higher the rest of your life. So that's one relatively easy way to adjust for people that are still in relatively good health. Alternatively, working part-time, a lot of boomers are thinking about unretiring or trying to start a new company or working in a new career even. And so all these are different flavors of retirement than we saw a generation ago.
So thinking about working longer, Richard.
It is an important option for a lot of people, and it can really recoup any losses you've had in your 401k plans if you never had a pension. For example, if you retire at 68 and collect your Social Security at 68 instead of 62, it will raise your Social Security benefits by 54%. So let's say instead of getting $1,000 a month, you're going to get $1,500 a month. That is equivalent to a lot of pretty generous pensions. So just doing that, working those extra 6 years, can really make an enormous difference. And a lot of people are able to change jobs late in life. So, for example, about 50% of people change jobs after age 50, and about a quarter of them move into whole new occupations. So it is possible to almost reinvent yourself late in your working life and pursue that job that you maybe always wanted to and just didn't have enough savings when you were younger to start a new business. Now that you're in your 50s, maybe you've accumulated enough of a nest egg to do something you really enjoy.
That seems pretty optimistic, though.
It's not for everyone, but it happens a lot. And it certainly is possible.
I think the most important option to exercise, if it's open to you, is to remain in the job that you have. And my reading of the evidence is that is one of the trends that we've seen over the last 20 years. There has been a gradual increase in the age at which people are leaving work, and a lot of that is explained by people delaying the age at which they leave their career jobs. As Richard said, people also change jobs. They have bridge jobs. They have jobs that are less demanding than their main career job. But there's a number of ways that people have increased the age at which they leave the workforce.
And what does that mean for the workforce, Olivia? Does it mean that perhaps younger people are feeling somewhat resentful of older people who are deciding for economic and psychological reasons to stay on longer?
Well, I think that there's some sense of the myth that if the younger workers, that the younger workers need to have the jobs that the older workers might be keeping. But in fact, that's been fairly well disputed with a lot of different evidence. I think one of the best sources of evidence is that when the women went into the labor force after having all of us baby boom babies, labor force participation went up 87% by women. And yet the whole level of employment in the economy still went up by 40%. So the economy is very flexible. It's very resilient. We can take advantage of the skills of older workers. But obviously what we also need is a resilient national economy and good fiscal and monetary policy to get us back into a healthy situation.
Another point is that older workers aren't the only ones who think that they may want to delay their work, their departure from work. If you look at these surveys that ask younger workers what they envision for the future, there's also been a jump in the age at which they think they will leave the workforce. So I would think there'd be a little bit of sympathy among people who are younger who also have this vision already that they'll be leaving the workforce later than their grandparents did.
There is one other point, if I could just jump
in,
which is if you look at the countries that have encouraged earlier retirement, some of the European countries come to mind. The cost of encouraging early retirement is high tax rates on the young, because you have to pay all these pension and health care benefits for people who are 55, who, after all, that's not very old, let's be clear. And so, conversely, countries that have encouraged later retirement and continued work don't need to burden the young so much, and therefore they have more youth employment.
Richard?
There's also a very important distributional issue that we should probably mention, which is that not everyone, of course, can work longer. And it really raises questions about what do we do then? If we're expecting people to work longer, what about the person who develops a health problem? What about the person with less education for whom employment prospects are much worse at older ages?
Or what about the person who's done a physical job for all of his or her life and can no longer continue?
That's right. And so there's a real question is that what kinds of programs can we create to help this vulnerable population? What some countries have done in Europe, for example, is to give some special preferences, some disability preferences to people 55 and older, 62 and older, people who are just not quite old enough to qualify for retirement benefits, but making it easier for them to get disability. The problem with that, though, is that sometimes these disability programs then morph into an early retirement program. So it's really hard to identify those people who really can't work. It's just a somewhat subjective process, and it's very expensive to administer a program like that.
Here's an email from Constance in Silver Spring. She says, when you're talking about the end of baby boomers' careers, I assume you're kidding. Very few of us can afford to retire. We're going to hold on as long as we can. Those of us without good jobs are looking for survival jobs. So don't look for the predicted wave of baby boomer retirements anytime soon, because for many of us, the alternative to working is life on the streets.
Well, among people who are 65, and that's the oldest baby boomers, only about 43% of men and a somewhat smaller share of women, maybe a third of women, are still actively in the labor force. So clearly a lot of the oldest baby boomers have indeed left the workforce. The age at which people are leaving is edging up, but it is not retirement is not going to disappear anytime soon, even for the baby boom generation. The oldest baby boomers, relative to younger generations, have reached their current age probably with better health and with more wealth than earlier generations had on average. And so I don't think that it is reasonable to think that we're going to go back to our great-grandparents' era and just never retire.
Olivia, here's an email from James in Kenmore, Washington. He says, I'm in my early 50s, and already I'm feeling some huge stress about my job prospects. It's as if I'm being told that I've reached my job obsolescence. Is it really possible to reinvent oneself these days?
It's a very, very interesting question with huge ramifications. I remember when the computers first came out, I went to my boss and said, you know, I'm a really fast typist. Can you buy me a computer? And he looked at me and he said, young lady, I've dictated 100,000 quality words per year for my entire professional life. Learn how to give dictation. So I went out and taught myself whatever, you know, the original Microsoft version of Word, and the rest is history. Mm-hmm. So I think we have to realize that we need to keep retraining ourselves, keep investing in our skills. It's not enough to finish high school or even go to college. You have to keep up with the curve, and technology is changing so quickly. We can't just give up when we're 40 or 50. We have to say, I'm going to have to work till I'm 70. Let me go retrain and build new skills so I have something in the labor market that people are willing to pay me to do.
Richard.
And, of course, the problem is that employers, many of them, have this impression that older workers are not going to be as up-to-date as younger workers. And so it really the burden falls on older folks to really demonstrate that they have those skills, because there is the impression that they don't.
Now, listen to this from Rebecca in Brattleboro, Vermont, who says, I'm 56, employed in private higher education. I'm the primary earner in my household and provide health insurance as my husband is self-employed. We have a child struggling to afford college, and I look out for my elderly mother who lives nearby. Though our jobless rate in Vermont is relatively low, I live in terror of losing my job to economic stress on higher ed and nonprofits in general. I should probably quit listening to shows like yours this hour, as they are so scary and depressing. Olivia.
Well, you know, telling the truth, it may be depressing, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't tell it. In other words, I don't want people to be paralyzed and think, oh, well, there's nothing I can do. Let's just carry on as though life was as in the past. I think what's more important is to look at what we can do. So working longer, that's one piece of it, retraining. Investing in our physical and mental health, I think, is really critical. You have to, you know, say to yourself, okay, New Year's resolution, time to quit smoking, time to lose weight. This is going to be an investment in the next 30 or 40 years of my life, and I need to do this. Diversify your portfolio. Don't put all your money into one house. We saw how that hurt people going looking backward. And cutting costs. You know, maybe you don't need that extra cup of coffee from the expensive coffee shop every day. Maybe you can hold your car for 12 years instead of leasing it for four. There are many, many ways that we can, in fact, save, but we have to put our mind to it.
Olivia Mitchell, she's at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania, and you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. We'll open the phones now, 800-433-8850. First to Petersburg, Michigan. Good morning, Matthew. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Diane. Thanks for having me on your show. What a pleasure it is to speak with you.
Thank you.
You know, I'm a 53-year-old guy, and kind of nervous. I never called him before. So
well, I'm glad to have you with us.
Yeah, thanks. Cheer me on this. When I was a graduate in 76, back in high, you know, 1976, I took a $5-an-hour job that came with Blue Cross and Blue Shield. It had full benefits. And I left that job for one that paid 5 1/4, and it came with a pension. So, I mean, you know, 35 years later, we're looking at some pretty stark realities. What it is your panelists talk about how people, you know, older workers can't find work. Well, I'm here to tell you that, you know, we sent the country out to China. And I just bought a pack of hinges at the hardware store, and it's made in China. And I'm installing the hinges. The Walt drill that's made in China. And, you know, we keep selling ourselves out. There's nothing left. And trying to reinvent ourselves at our age is a joke, because who's got the effort and the energy to even do that nowadays?
What do you think, Richard?
Well, I mean, the caller's right that we look at earnings for men over the past 30 years. They've been declining. At best, they've been stagnating. And a big part of the problem is increased globalization. A lot of jobs are going overseas. There's at least more foreign competition, and that seems to depress wages for at least low-skilled men. I think a lot of the discussion when we're talking about the retirement prospects of the boomers, though, is somewhat overly pessimistic, because we forget about some really good news that's happening, and in particular, women's increased labor force participation, their increased earnings. A lot of women are now earning retirement benefits under their own name. They're accumulating pension wealth under their own name, and that's really helping to improve household income for married couples in retirement, and that's a very positive development.
All right. Nicole in Charlotte, North Carolina. Good morning, John.
Morning. My question was to Richard about Social Security. But first, I guess since you just commented on it, I'm unemployed right now looking for a job, and I'm optimistic that I'll find something. But my wife has a great job right now, and she earns a pension. And so our household's in good shape. But my question was about, I think it was Richard that said, waiting to draw on Social Security until you turn 68. And I did the math when I got my most recent statement, and what I found was if I waited until 68, I would not have dollar for dollar the same amount if I started drawing at 62 until I was 78 years old. And so it seemed to make sense to me to drawing on Social Security as soon as possible, because, again, if I started drawing at 62, I would have, and I could invest that money maybe in a, 401k or whatever, self-directed IRA, and earn money on it, as opposed to waiting until 68 and not having the same exact amount until I was 78 years old.
All right, Gary and Richard, both.
Well, that's why I emphasized if you're a worry wart. If you're a worry wart, you think that I might live to be 95, and long before I reach 95, I'm going to use up all my savings, and my other sources of income are going to dry up. In that case, Social Security is going to be a good source of retirement income.
All
and
right,
later
I'm
that
sure,
you draw it, the better.
I'm sure we can talk more about this after we take a short break. I look forward to hearing from you.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the Pew Charitable Trust, driven by the power of knowledge to solve today's most challenging problems at pewtrusts.org, by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives at gatesfoundation.org, and by the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org. This is NPR.
The Showtime series Californication begins its new season this weekend. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with one of the show's stars, Pamela Adlon. She's also played a recurring character on Louis C.K.'s series Louis. She was the voice of the 12-year-old boy, Bobby Hill, on King of the Hill, and has done the voices for lots of other animated characters. Join us.
And welcome back. Here's a tweet from Raja Jani, who says, "My parents are in their 50s, lost jobs 4 years ago. I pay their expenses. They do not qualify for Medicaid or Medicare. They worked 20 years. I see people who never worked have free government insurance and food stamps. Punishment for working hard, Olivia?"
That's a real tough one. I mean, I think in the broad scheme of things, we have to realize that we're going to live longer, longer, and you can't expect to live to 100 and only work for a third of your life or a quarter of your life. So the issue about safety net programs and people taking advantage of them is one thing. But the fact is that if we're going to live to be 100, we're going to have to work till we're 70 or 80 years old on average. And I think that's the direction we're heading.
All right. To Centerville, Maryland. Good morning, Ed.
Hey, Diane. Thanks for having me on your show.
Surely.
There's been many interesting points made about what is happening to the baby boomers, and that includes things like living longer, that includes things like losing the equity in their home as a retirement resource. I think that one of the areas I'd like to hear your guest comment on is the almost avalanche movement of corporations from defined benefits, pensions, to 401ks, and most importantly, the abysmal performance that 401ks have shown as a retirement mechanism. People feel lucky to make 2% on their investments today. And if you do the math and figure out what you need to live frugally but longer, 401ks have been just probably one of the biggest disasters to hit the baby boomers. And they're the first generation, I think, that is going to have to rely on things like 401ks primarily.
All right. Olivia, do you want to comment?
So I would disagree rather strenuously, sir, with all due respect. And I agree we're in an environment where if you're making 2% on your savings, this is a bad world to be in. You're going to have to save 40% of your income if you want to come up with a nest egg that will pay you half of your pre-retirement pay. And so it's just a bad capital market. But on the other hand, I would say that we have to realize only 1 out of 10 employees that ever started working under a defined benefit plan covered at an employer ever gets a benefit from that employer. So the fact that defined benefit coverage has gone down, I think it's actually fairly egalitarian. There are a lot more people that are going to be reaching retirement age with their money in a 401k plan. Because they are more inclusive, because you can take them with you as you move from job to job. The crux of the problem, though, is contributing enough and investing it smartly. And that's where we have to do our work.
Gary.
I think Olivia is referring to the fact that a lot of people who started work at a traditional employer with a traditional plan never worked long enough to really qualify for a very good pension. And that is a risk that I think many people who bemoan the loss of traditional pensions forget. Lots of people in the old regime worked for many years and didn't quite work long enough to get really the golden ring that they were expecting. Yes, that kind of pension has a lot of security for the people who qualify for the full pension, but Olivia and I and many other researchers who've looked into this recognize that a lot of people start to work for those employers and never got the golden ring.
So if your pension kicked in after 30 years and you worked 29 and a half, what happened?
Well, it's more complicated than that. Suffice it to say that you often have to work until you reach 55 to really get the best kind of a prize, and many people had careers that were interrupted at the company before they reached critical
Richard.
Age.
And the good news is that 401ks are really improving. So many employers now are offering automatic enrollment to their employees. The problem used to be that people wouldn't even bother to sign up for these plans, and so they'd miss out on the matching and they wouldn't accumulate any money for retirement. But now a lot of employers automatically sign up people, and then now they're also introducing auto escalation, it's called, so that the amount of money that you contribute will automatically increase as you get older. So really to encourage people to invest more.
All right, to Dallas, Texas. Good morning, Mercedes. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning, Diane. Thank you so much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm listening to all of the different theories and prospects of the guests on your show about early retirement, the pitfalls. I have come through a devastating time in my life, as so many other Americans have. I faced an unexpected illness. I lost everything in Hurricane Katrina, and I was virtually homeless for a long period of my life. And when I did relocate to Dallas, Texas, it was the beginning of a new life for me, only to discover that I had stage 4 cancer. I was totally unaware of that. That hit me out of the blue. I was forced to take an early retirement at age 62. I knew the ramifications of that, but I needed to find an immediate way to get medical care,
sure,
to live, to subsist. My previous employer, if that was the only viable job I had in my entire life. In the 80s, everything went bust, and while the rest of the country was talking about recovery, that particular area in Louisiana never recovered. There were no viable employers coming to the location, and due to political corruption, which was tolerated for many, many decades, no one was encouraged to start new companies, new businesses,
yes,
because of the intense political corruption.
All right, Mercedes, I'm so sorry for the excruciating situation you find yourself in. And Olivia Mitchell, as we look at this, there are people across the country who are in perhaps not as dire as Mercedes' situation, but are in that place they call hopeless, that they simply, the idea of even finding an employer willing to hire them is impossible.
Well, I'm very, very sympathetic, and this is why I do call it the age of diminished expectations. I think that boomers are not going to look ahead at the golden age of the past. I hope that our children are in better circumstances than we are, though many of them, seeing what we're going through, have thrown in the towel and said, well, why should I save my pennies? If I put it in the stock market, I'll lose it. If I put it in the bank, I won't make any money. And this is why one of my big efforts is to try to focus on financial literacy. Because until people understand that they need to save, they need to insure, they need to take care of themselves, it's going to be very, very difficult. We know that about 18% of the baby boomers, only 18% of the baby boomers, understand compound interest. These people have made credit card decisions all their lives. They've taken out mortgages, borrowed to buy cars, borrowed for school. And no wonder they are in financial straits, because we haven't done our job training people to think about saving an investment.
That's interesting, considering this posting on Facebook from Brian, who says, I think your guests need to revise their opinions on whether the baby boomers created their own problems. He goes on to say they are a greedy generation. They have enjoyed low taxes, high salary demands over the years. Why have they not been saving for retirement? As a 32-year-old business professional, I cannot wait for the baby boomers to leave corporate America. Their greed and inability to evolve is affecting business as we know it. Gary.
Well, it is a good question. Why haven't the baby boomers been saving? Although I would point out that that is also true of the generation that's older than the baby boomers and the generation that's younger than the baby boomers. And a reasonable explanation is that for much of the last 25 years until 2007, the capital markets of the world were doing the saving for many Americans. Their houses were becoming more valuable every year. The stock market had an unprecedented rise from 1982 to 2000, and that just put a lot of wealth in the pockets of not only baby boomers, people older and younger than the baby boom, and so they didn't feel the need to save as much. With regard to any particular generation's greed, I'm a little skeptical of any paintbrush that puts an entire generation as being guilty of some grave sin. I think that there was greed before the baby boomers were born, and there's going to be greed after the baby boomers have left the stage.
Mike in Colony, Texas, emails us saying, your guests keep saying, we'll have to work longer, but there just are not jobs to work at. What suggestions do they have for those who cannot find a job to keep until they are 70? Richard.
Well, if you are not able to find a job and you've looked through all of your connections, and one of the advantages older people have is they tend to have a better network than younger people, it can help them get jobs. If that's really not possible, the options, if you're already approaching 60, if you're already in 60, are quite limited. There's not much really to do. You just have to, I think, fall back on your savings. And I think it highlights the importance of the safety net. Right now, the safety net is has really kind of withered over time and highlights the importance of maybe raising minimum benefits for Social Security or other types of things.
What options can boomers look at to make themselves more marketable, Olivia, if they do lose their jobs?
Well, I mean, one of the things that we think a lot about is retraining in skills and computers, and most of the jobs that older people have are in health and education and services. So anything that would enhance one's edge in that area would certainly help. Another factor that I think has contributed to the persistence of high unemployment is the fact that we have really, as a nation, subsidized home purchases for so long. And now that housing is spread across more and more of the older population, they're unwilling to leave if they can't get their money out of their house, which they probably can't, given the housing prices are so low. But I think that's helped contribute to pockets of unemployment. Mm-hmm. In fact, the right way to go about it is to move, in many cases, to an area where there is growth, where there are jobs. That may be dislocating, but it may be the only option.
And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Gary.
We don't have any cures for the difficulty in finding a job, and that is true if you're 22, 42, or 62. But the 62-year-old has one thing going for him or her that the people who are younger do not, and that is if they cannot find work and they exhaust their unemployment benefits, they can file for Social Security early retirement benefits, and that is not a resource available to younger people.
To Fort Bragg, North Carolina. Chris, you're on the air.
Hi, Diane. Thank you for taking my call.
Surely.
Well, what I'd like to ask is first, is politicians are sometimes talking now about letting the younger workers opt out of Social Security. And so that makes me wonder, you know, what that would do to the system as it is. And also, the other thing that maybe is kind of silly, but based on these, you know, higher costs of living and sort of the difficulties in finding a job, I sort of wonder if we might be forced to go back to sort of how we were maybe 100 years ago, where families relied more on each other, where mom and dad and grandma and grandpa and all the kids lived together and pool resources.
That's already happening, isn't it, Olivia?
Well, indeed. I mean, the good news is that the evidence shows that the more you have family and community to rely on, the easier it is to age in place, the less likely you'll have to move into a nursing home when you're young, and so on. The difficulty, though, is that more and more baby boomers are reaching retirement age with very complex family stories, divorced, remarried, redivorced, kids in different parts of the country, and so on. And so it's going to be less likely to rely on family, and I think therefore more necessary to rely on next-door neighbors, communities. I shovel my neighbor's walk, and she picks up my papers when I'm not home. That kind of thing makes it possible for us to stay where we are longer.
Richard.
And, of course, many of the boomers, as your caller a few moments ago mentioned, it's the sandwich generation, people who are both caring for elderly parents and also caring for young children, and that creates a lot of stress for boomers.
But going to Chris's direct point about Social Security, is it going to be here for the younger generation by the time they reach retirement age, Gary?
Well, I think it will. It's a political calculation much more than an economic calculation. At every future point in time, we have to ask ourselves, where is the majority of the voter population that is going to support dismantling Social Security as a mandatory program for everyone young and old? And it's hard for me to see the coalition that's going to support that kind of unraveling. It would be worse of all for the baby boom generation. They have contributed to Social Security throughout their life. And at this stage, few of them have the resources to save enough to replace Social Security.
Especially when all you'd have to do to correct the Social Security mess is to lift the cap on earnings. That's my thought for the day. Gary Burtless of the Brookings Institution, Richard Johnson of the Urban Institute, and Olivia Mitchell of the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. Thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and